Justin, I have a question for you.
So tell me the question, Plant.
We're recording this episode before the PlayStation 5 announcement. That means it's going to show up right after it. I think this is an opportunity for us to, you know, kind of like write our prediction in the letter, close it, and then deliver it to ourselves afterwards, and then everybody will see, wow, these people know what they're talking about. They're
Dino Crisis
experts.
At launch. Dino Crisis at launch. I just said Dino Crisis at launch. I'm sorry. Stupid. God, stupid.
No,
don't
want to.
I don't know why I said I panicked.
So
I panicked.
Curious.
Dino Crisis at launch.
Is that your biggest prediction, or do you have something that, like, everybody's
going to
look back?
You want bigger than Dino Crisis at launch?
I mean,
are you kidding
obvious.
Me?
I think it's obvious.
I have a prediction, and that is that during the big announcement presser that is going to happen tomorrow, Mark Cerny is going to like do a move, and his leather pants are going to split like Lenny Kravitz that one time, and his balls are going to fall out. And that has taken Chris out of the conversation entirely. And I realize that that is maybe a controversial pick.
Now, I think Mark will come out and say, folks, we too are worried about the effects of COVID-19. In fact, I guess you could say I'm Mark concerning about it.
Oh, no.
Oh, boy. We have put Chris into the ground.
My name is Justin McElroy, and I know the best game of the planets.
My name is Griffin McElroy, and I know the best game.
My name is Chris Plant, and I know the best game of the year 2007.
My name is Ross Farshik, and I know the best game of the Wii.
Welcome back to the Besties, where we talk about the latest and greatest in home interactive entertainment.
Also, hi everybody. You might have noticed we missed an episode last week. It did not feel appropriate for us to do an episode of The Besties and talk about silly video games last week. We're going to say the obvious, that obviously Black Lives Matter, and we support that cause. Something we've always done and why we always get together is we want to create an inclusive space. That's what we take pride in, right? That everybody feels like they can listen to the show and participate in this conversation. So last week, if you follow us on Twitter, you saw that we recommended you listen to the show Spawn on Me. It's on Spotify and a lot of other podcast networks. We recommend you continue to listen to that show because, frankly, that show just rules.
It kicks ass. That's a premium follow right there.
It's excellent. And this week, we're going to talk about video games and try to bring you a splash of joy, and hopefully we'll be continuing activism in the weeks to come. So thank you for joining us. Now we're going to talk about Super Mario Galaxy.
It still feels like a little, like,
still
I don't know.
Feels a little early.
A little early.
We're pushing it.
I don't know. Like, my like, gaming has not felt like appropriate at all. I've been playing a lot of like FF14, like a lot of sort of like big escapist sort of, you know, progression based games lately that like I have just not been able to like feel like good sinking my teeth into, like, because it feels like escapism feels like a privilege and a luxury right now. And honestly, like, Super Mario Galaxy, as silly as and banal as this sounds, like, I've been more into playing this game than I thought, because it has been nice to just kind of like dip into something kind of lightweight and play a couple levels of something and like not have to like really fucking focus and completely tune myself out to the extremely important events that are going on right now.
I have started to see some people who are out there like protesting and doing great work, starting to talk about burnout. And I feel like maybe we could do our small part to provide a little bit of respite if you need to take a breather before you get back out there, perhaps letting us whisk you away to the halcyon days of 2007 will provide that oasis.
It's funny when you mentioned burnout, because I thought you were talking about Burnout.
Do you guys just want to do Burnout 3? Because I would fucking...
If you just want to do Burnout 3... No, you will not make the time I tried to play Super Mario Galaxy for the second time a waste. You will not make me that time have been a waste. We are going to talk about the game Super Mario Galaxy.
I'm so glad that this is the game that we have capped out this 2007 discussion with, because I feel like there has been this mounting thing for all of these games where we have talked about recognizing the foundational importance of the games that we are playing, but also recognizing that they have had their lunch so completely eaten by, most of the time, have had their lunch so completely eaten by the games that followed, that evolved on the formulas and evolved on those things. Coming into this, I was so stoked to play Super Mario Galaxy because it, and particularly 2, I remember 2 being a fucking masterpiece and really, really liking 1. But returning to this game has made me realize that Super Mario Odyssey is one of the best fucking video games ever. Like, it has, I feel like it so completely like innovates on and like does so much stuff better than any of the 3D Mario games that sort of followed it. And with that, I see Chris Plant sort of chomping at the bit.
He's eating his glasses. He's taking his glasses off. He's eating them.
I'm so mad at Hoops. I'm honestly like pissed because you're supposed to be on my team of Hurt Puppy video game supporters. And Mario Galaxy is the only Hurt Puppy game in, well, let's not talk about Mario Sunshine, but
yeah, I was about to say, what the fuck?
Of the core Mario games, it is that. So shaggy and messy. And again, going off a theme of what we talked about, of people like reaching way outside their limits, it is that video game.
It is well established. My love for shaggy games only extends to Eastern Europe. I love that flavor. I love what they're bringing. I'm into it. This is a, like, I definitely can celebrate the ambition of making, if you haven't played Super Mario Galaxy, here, the main hook is this. Rather than walking in a 2D plane, obviously, or a flat 3D plane, you're in a 3D plane that is typically spherically constructed. And that means that you could obviously, like, if you keep walking forward, you would theoretically end up back where you started. And when that works, it's pretty neat. Mm-hmm. It's a neat idea. It's pretty neat. There are several enemies and boss fights where, like, they make really good use of that. You know, it's like chasing someone in circles around you, which if you think about it, you can't really do. But like the idea that, like, oh, I see this point, I'm going to drag you back around to this thing that I can use to hurt you or whatever. Or just this sense of, like, it's fun, the idea of, like, jumping from, like, off the edge of something and ending up back around on the other side of it. That's cool.
It feels so good to long jump into orbit. Every time I landed on a new little planetoid, I was like, can I long jump into orbit on this one? Because that is still one of the best feeling things.
But for me, we're sort of like, I feel like this is one of those cases where, like, the ambition outstripped the execution. That, for one, the camera is like still in another Mario game. It didn't get the notice about how we're doing this thing.
Well, there is no camera. It's actually worse than Mario 64, because in this game they have to control where you're looking because certain puzzles are determined by, like, what you can see.
Right,
so you
locked.
Don't have control of the camera, which is really jarring play any 3D game, let alone a 3D game where you're, like, on a planet. Is tough.
And then the other thing about that, the other place where it's like, it just sometimes feels bad to me as often as it feels good. There's a lot of instances where, like, oh, it's the fun of, like, jumping off the edge of the planet and ending up on the other side of the planet, except sometimes you jump off an edge and you fall in the center of the planet and die.
Yeah.
And that's, like, it's not fun.
Yeah, that's what I didn't really remember when I was thinking about playing this game, how many, like, insta-death pits there are. And I realized, like, that's an element in classic Mario games that is, like, very predictable and, like, happened a lot. But in 3D Mario games, it's way less frequent. But here, it's, like, all over the place. Like, oh, black hole, you're dead.
I feel like they got better about that in Galaxy 2. But like I said, like, the long jumping into orbit feels so good. And on the strict inverse of that, nothing makes me feel like a bigger asshole in the world than, like, time to long jump into orbit. And then it's like, no, actually, you just jumped like a big idiot
into space and died.
A singularity where his body was torn apart at the molecular level. So you fucked up.
I have a third one. This is my last one. And this one is very contrary to the spirit of Mario, I feel like. There are these chunks of Star Dookie that are all over, little crystalline chunks of star poop, star nuggets, star bits. Maybe they're star bits. That you would theoretically, you use the Wiimote to point at those, or Mario can run over them, or use the Wiimote to point at them to pick them up. Mm. Which feels like a very ham-fisted way of like just using all the meat on the Wii animal. I think that Chris
me.
Looks like he's being electrocuted. But then there are like these animals that are like, feed me that good Star Dookie. I need 400 pieces. And they've like gated it in a way where like, you need to go get some more star money for me to eat, for me to turn into the fun thing that you want to go do. That just doesn't feel good. Those are my big three that I don't enjoy about Super Mario Galaxy.
Jump in there, Brian.
I'm going to try to convince you why the game is actually magical. So it started out as a demo for, it was called Mario 128, which maybe you've seen footage of, and it was going to be on GameCube. Right. And basically, they made it, and then everybody at Nintendo was like, absolutely not. This is impossible. And then 4 years later, Miyamoto was like, oh, we need something for the Wii. We don't even know what the Wii is yet. Like, they didn't even figure out the motion controls. And they're like, we just need a really striking Mario. Let's try this again. And basically, only because he supported it, it got made. Because everybody else in leadership just keeps being like, this doesn't make sense. Like, this isn't fun. It's not how Mario works. And the big reason it's not like Mario works is because it's not a game about jumping. Like, you can jump for fun, but the main attack is that spin attack. Because jump on characters is incredibly challenging, right?
Holy shit, yeah.
And that's the thing they figure out with 2. So in you mentioned, like, 2 is much smoother. Correct, because 2 realizes there are 2 separate games happening at once. There's the 3D globe-spinning world, where the focus of the game is, like, traversal and spinning. And then when it wants to do jumping platforms, it puts you in locked 2D environments. And it just shifts. Like, it's, you either get one or the other. And what I like about this game, but also what makes it kind of annoying, is it's just like, whatever, we're just going to try everything. It's okay if it annoys you at times, because it's just going to be this, like, absolute zany mash of ideas. Mm. Two is unquestionably a better game, and I'll talk about it later. But at the same time, because it's so polished, you don't have that energy of just, like, moment to moment, this game is just completely subverting itself. That's one thing. The other thing, I want to talk about the star bits, right? I think that is weird to us now because we're not playing, like, a Wii with our family, and it's not like a novelty, just have a Wii around. When that was around, the whole idea of the Wii, especially with Iwata, was, okay, there's always going to be somebody else in the room because just looking at a Wii is, like, inherently magical. So we need to give them things to do that will then get them to eventually play a Wii. And the whole, like, path to playing, making new people video game players was, okay, first, the game has to be pretty, so they'll watch it. Second, we have to give them, like, fringe accessibility, which in this game was the second player could aim the wand to collect those bits, mm-hmm. and that's all they had to do.
Or could shoot, fire or it. Shoot they it. Could shoot
yeah.
it, yeah.
yeah.
And then after that, it's like, okay, now you're going to start your own save file, which I love. Like, I love that as an idea. You're right. As, like, a one-player thing, it's whatever. Fortunately, the levels that you unlock are totally optional, so you don't have to collect the star bits.
And not great. Also, with those are typically the motion control levels, which are not, I would say, the highlight of Super Mario Galaxy, or truly any video game that ever came out on the Wii.
Yeah. Also, and here's the biggest thing, and I'm going to spoil the ending. I hope people don't mind me spoiling
the ending of this game is fucking wild.
So the ending is you showdown with Bowser, naturally. The whole time you've been collecting these Luma stars, right? And during your showdown with Bowser, a black hole forms, at which point all of the stars sacrifice their lives by funneling into the black hole. And then poof, like 2001 style, splash to white. And then we wake up, and now we're back at the beginning of the game. You know, Mario's back on Planet Mario with Princess Peach, except all of the people we met along the way, they're friends now, and they're on our planet. And then you get this message that's like, oh, to new beginnings, which suggests Mario dies. Everybody dies. And this is an entirely new dimension formed by the explosion of a black hole. Straight up, Mario canonically dies at the end of Mario Galaxy.
Come on, they could have all time traveled.
Probably no, not no, that's not. Us. No, no, this isn't a time travel. This is. They say this is. Stars must die to create new things. They make it pretty explicit. Mario straight up dies.
Did Mario have a, when the stars were like, "We're gonna sacrifice ourselves so you can be Bowser"? Did Mario have a minute where he's like, "I've actually beaten him like 30 times. Like,
yeah,
I don't need to do this. Please,
check this out. I'm gonna grab that dude's big tail and I'm gonna throw him into a bomb. It's so fucking easy.
Look behind that dumbass. Do you see that big axe? He always puts it behind it. I don't fucking get
it. It's a dipshit.
He just leaves it there. Why, hey, one of you motherfuckers, you're stars. Just go get the axe. Go get the axe. Don't throw yourself. Yep. Oh, now you're doing it.
We already crossed the event horizon, Mario. Wish you said something earlier, pal. It is literally the ending of Outer Wilds. It is like, yes. We have all life in the universe has been extinguished. But, you know, 14 billion years from now, Mario, it's going to be fucking great, babe.
I understand that I'm broken. And for me, like, my enjoyment of a game is inexorably tied to a sense of progress. In some games, you know, like RPG type mechanics, that's a big part of it. That can be a huge draw for me. Obviously, you're not getting that pretty much in any Mario game. But I think another thing is the progress of like beating something and getting something out of it. But for Odyssey, I think the joy of that was just in like the sense of discovery. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. I found the star. I found the thing I was supposed
to
do.
And also the environments changed so dramatically that even just getting to a new level was like, oh, wow, this is like a completely different thing that you've just unlocked.
Yeah, and that was the pull for me, right? Like, the pull for me you know, earlier Mario games, it was very much about the challenge of, like, can you beat it?
Yeah.
And if you beat it, that's like the sense of accomplishment that you get. And for Odyssey, the sense of accomplishment or the sense of progress that I really crave is, like, you know, finding the stars, finding the hidden stars, being smart about ways to like get the different stars, etc. And I'm kind of embarrassed to admit this, but like for me, without that perfect sense of like fun playing Galaxy, like it wasn't just constantly that pleasure of like perfectly tuned mechanics. I think that's where it really fell apart. Like I didn't know why I was continuing to play it. And I think that's a fault partially with myself. I shouldn't need someone, you know, flicking Tic Tacs into my mouth to keep me playing the game, but like I didn't feel that compulsion to play just one more level.
I think it is a pacing issue. I think Mario Galaxy does not necessarily, that element, that excitement that you have of going to a new environment does not exist when you're just going to one of these different galaxies, because while there are different mechanics, they are not by and large that dramatically different from one another. They are similar enough, I would say.
Some of them are cool though. Like I really dug the little bee costume.
Yeah. Oh yeah. The bee costume.
I don't know why you had to do the annoying thing where if he gets wet, you're not a bee anymore. Which is just pure. That's pure Mario. Like, oh, you know, if you get wet, you're not a bee no more.
Bees don't like that.
Bees don't like to get wet. Which probably they don't.
Yeah.
Who likes to be wet?
I agree. I think Super Mario Odyssey is probably like the perfect Mario game. I can't argue with it. But what I like about...
No, I know. It's unfair of us to be like, sure. Well, is it as good as Mario Odyssey but from 20...
What I like about Galaxy 1 is... The best thing I can describe it is like... It feels like you're wrestling it. Like, literally just controlling it feels like work. Mm. And I don't find it frustrating. It just feels like I'm like really trying to master the complexity of moving this space. And it's like a weird challenge in the same way that when you first played the original Mario, right? Like just learning how to control something in this weird, unusual space was thrilling. And I hadn't really gotten that from any Mario game since. Where Mario Odyssey and even Mario Galaxy 2 is like, well, you played Mario 64, you're going to be okay. Like we're going to make sure you feel very comfortable and that the tools that you've learned along the way as a Mario fan are going to be applicable. And I love Odyssey so much, but they just always end up feeling so safe for me, Mario games, where it's like, okay, and now I'm going to do more Mario things, which is like not really fair. Like this is clearly me favoring novelty of something like Galaxy, where it's just so cool that we at least have one Mario game that they were like, we're not going to do the Mario thing or the Nintendo thing. We're not going to polish this into oblivion. There are going to be galaxies where the background of the galaxy is just a JPEG repeating of like a child's bedroom. And that's going to be okay. And I'm just glad. I'm glad that we got that, and kind of amazed that this game won like every game of the year in 2007. So of all of the games, it won game of the year at IGN, GameSpot, Nintendo Power, Kotaku, and Yahoo.
Is that a recency bias thing? Like, did it come out close to the end of the year? I feel like it did, right? Didn't it come out in like...
A lot of these, though, were fall. I mean, I think that what... this is me talking out of my ass. But as we come to the end of this 2007 miniseries, I think that this was not... I don't necessarily agree that it is like the best year for video games, as our readers have said. But I do think what's cool about 2007 is it is a very much a fulcrum mm-hmm. year of like things changing and setting the stage, honestly, for where we're going to end up. And I think that you do see a lot of like novelty bias with so many of the games that we've talked about are about like they're doing something very new that in 2007 especially felt like hugely ambitious. Mm-hmm. And I think that like Galaxy is a really good example of that. Like, I bet in the moment it just felt wild that they were pulling it off, like that it was happening at all, you know, yeah. that it was functioning at all. But I think that was 2007 was a period where I think everybody was very on board with the idea of like something new and like rewarding that and like feeling that sense of like needing something novel.
Yeah, a thing that Jeremy Parrish pointed out when he reviewed the game at 1UP that I think speaks to why it probably won Game of the Year so many places is it was an amazing family game in a year of M-rated hits.
Right.
Like, all the other games, despite all being very creative in their own way, bled together in this like miasma of adult mature shooter games. And then you have this thing come along that feels so unlike the rest of what is happening in games. I could see how in that moment of, you know, outlets deciding what was the best game, that maybe it's like splitting the vote. All the shooters split the vote. Yeah. And then Galaxy is like, well, we all agreed that Galaxy was good.
Yeah. Here's this oasis of like calm after we've spent an entire year playing games like Modern Warfare.
It's so funny because like this also speaks to the Nintendo of 2007, like the post GameCube Nintendo that was sort of meandering. And the Wii was obviously a hit as a like video game platform, but as like a game developer, like everybody was frustrated with Nintendo, even though the Wii was in every single home in the country. Everybody was saying like, but where's fucking Modern Warfare on the Wii? I think we did eventually get a Modern Warfare port. Where's BioShock on the Wii? Where's all the big third party, you know, hits that are coming out right now? You are pigeonholing yourself into being just the family friendly, you know, here's a handful of high quality games. But like now, arguably, that's still kind of what Nintendo is, and we fucking love them for it. So, like, I feel like this was the year where maybe, like, we started to reckon with that a little bit of just like, yeah, this is not... Super Mario Galaxy is different from the rest of the games that came out this year, and the Wii U especially are going to falter sort of third-party-wise, but, like, damn it, Nintendo. I'm glad somebody's out here doing it.
Also, now they're like 13 years later, oh, you want BioShock? We've got it. You can play it on Nintendo Switch. We got it. We heard you.
That's it. So what was the best game of 2007?
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I would say, yikes, this is kind of a weird way to look at it, but in terms of like the game that I think was closest to like done, like I would say it's either Portal or Modern Warfare. I think both of those are like, they feel, even looking back at them, they still feel kind of modern and kind of, they work. I mean, obviously the story elements of Call of Duty are a little... But by and large, like the actual game itself, as well as Portal, both of those have aged like very, very well, and have it continued to inform game design since then. Whereas a lot of these games that we've talked about haven't.
I feel like Portal is the game. Okay, if we're just basing it on like this replay that we've just finished doing,
yeah.
Portal is the one that I had the most fun playing.
Yeah,
I don't think it is. I would disagree that it is the most important, sort of like foundationally speaking. I think Modern Warfare is probably the easiest one to make that case for, but man, maybe it stands the test of time a little bit better because it is so standalone. Like, it is so its own thing, and you know, the only innovations that have happened on top of Portal are Portal 2, so there's not even that much to like look at and be like, oh man, this could have been so much better. Yeah, Portal is just kind of and this is like I think, you know, everybody who played it had the foresight in 2007 to say, like, this is a perfect little game. Like, this is that. I remember that being, like, why I think we gave it Game of the Year a joystick, was just like, yeah, it's just fucking 3 hours in and out. It is perfect. Every part of it is so well executed. I think that's probably where my vote goes, surprisingly.
Justin?
I think I probably liked, I think it was probably BioShock. Like, and mainly just remembering how that made me feel initially, and seeing how much of the groundwork for the future of games that, like, I really love. And that's kind of outside the mechanical aspects of BioShock, or at least on the combat mechanic side. But there's so much about storytelling in games that I feel like is building on what BioShock did. Mm-hmm. And then that was really cool to go back to and see. I think it still feels really, like, especially if you were not familiar with that story, I think it still holds up remarkably well.
Yeah. I think for me, influential is Call of Duty, just because, I mean, it caused tons of publishers to dump tons of cash into, like, wannabe shooters.
Right.
And there was just so much of it. If I'm thinking critically, what do I think is, like, the most interesting game? For me, it's Portal. I think so many of these games, or it would be Portal or Galaxy. The rest, Halo, COD, BioShock, Uncharted, God of War, they're games that, and we've talked about this a lot throughout this, they're games that are wanting to be adult, but are mostly turning out to be rated M for mature. And they're like starting to get at that idea of, you know, like, what is a serious game? What is a mature game? What is a game that wants to say something? But they're still batting up against the fact that your only way of communicating with the world is by, for most of them, shooting somebody in the face, or in Kratos's case, like, ripping out their eyes and forcing it down their throat. and I think, like, that, honestly, that, like, gets at how much things have changed in the last 13 years for the better. One, we're seeing AAA games try not to have that be the only thing you do in these games. Even some of those games or sequels tried. But also just indie games have gotten so much better. I guess that's, like, the kind of perfect merger of what we saw with the small game like Portal, and with, you know, the ambitions of these AAA games, was telling stories that matter, that are adult, that are fascinating and engaging, and don't rely on the mechanisms of, like, the last 30 years of video game history. So yeah, that, like, when you say, like, 2007 was a fulcrum, I think that's spot on. I think years after that have been much better because we've gotten to actually see the fruit of that change. It was certainly an important year.
Are we ready to move on?
I think so.
Let's
to the rest
do
of our
it.
Program. Let's take a quick break and then we'll be right back.
Hey everybody, my uncle here, Jake Plant, he works in Nintendo. His name is Jake Nintendo Plant, is what he was called. The company's named after him. But he was hoping that you could help him figure out the next great Mario spinoff. So I'll just let him get the phone. 1 second, he's going to come through the door. Hi, I'm Jake Plant.
Hey, Jake.
Hey, Jake.
Hey, Jake.
Just wondering if you could have a talk with Chris about his character work that he's been doing. It feels like he's been stepping on Russ's toes, maybe, like, a lot even since we relaunched the Besties, and I'm just curious if he feels any level of guilt about that.
So I actually don't listen to this show.
Oh, okay.
Fair.
Yeah.
Fair.
Yeah. So I work at Nintendo, and did I mention I'm Chris's uncle? And we are trying to figure out the next big game for Mario. He's golfed. He has carded. He has painted. Quite frankly, I've spoken with Miyamoto, and we worry that we've run out of things for him to do.
Mm-hmm.
So we were hoping that you, the Besties, who I've never listened to, would have great expertise on something that we could do for Mario next.
Yeah. No, it's interesting because you're right. He has been pretty versatile, but it does seem like Mario has ignored his actual literal job that he's had for literally ever.
Oh, yeah.
Because he's never done any fucking plumbing ever. Like, never.
And you're not talking about, like, fucking pipe dream style puzzle game. Like,
no. I'm talking about running the logistics of a small business, which is not an easy thing to do.
Oh, interesting. I was even thinking about the act of plumbing, like diagnosing, like, a leaky turlet.
I mean, that's part of it. That's part of it. But also building a client list, and knowing how much to upcharge. Like, how much does a washer cost?
Yeah, talking to his like nephew about Yelp, like not understanding necessarily how that works.
When you say his nephew, you mean Toad, because canonically, as a Nintendo representative, I can let you know he does not have a nephew.
No, he does. Oh. Luigi has a son. Oh.
And what's his name?
Luigi's son?
Uh-huh.
It's
Luigi.
It's one of the Koopa kids. And
what?
Yeah. So that's why
he adopted one of the Koopa kids after he killed King Bowser.
Does right, Bowser yeah. know?
It's Ludwig, actually. He's he's Ludwig's dad. So yeah. And who are you to say what a family is, fucking Jake?
Yeah, you're such an absentee uncle that you can't even be bothered to listen to your nephew's podcast.
Yeah.
What about mining?
Mining.
Mario gets down deep into the dirt. We've seen him. We know how he can do it with tubes, but this time they've taken the tubes away from him. So there's no pipes for this boy this time. Now he has to dig his own pipes through the ground. And it's so good because we're getting in on some rising trends like mining and video games. And
so
he'll
hot,
be able
so
to like
hot.
Put together. It's so hot. He'll be able to put together different rocks to make coins or something. I don't know. He makes the coins out of gold. He makes his own coins, counterfeit coins, Mario Bucks, he calls them. He tries to spend them places and no one accepts them. And then he starts his own colony under the ground where he welcomes people as long as they are completely mentally, physically, sexually subservient to him.
Whoa.
Mario in his underground kingdom.
So I like where we're at. Is there a way that we could combine these two ideas of Mario digging infrastructure with Mario pee pee poo poo cleaning up toilets?
I mean, even underground societies need pee pee poo poo toilets. Like, where do you think they're going to pee pee poo poo?
It's a way that he shows his people that he still cares about them.
Grounded.
Remember at the Last Supper when Jesus washed the feet of the disciples to make himself humbled before them? That such is a man that who wishes to enter the kingdom of God. This is what Mario will do for his people.
And thank you for the smooth transition, Justin, because the profession that I was going to suggest was youth pastor for
okay,
Mario.
Perfect. He's got the mustache for it. I mean, I'm just going to say.
I don't know what that means necessarily. I know that you and I had many youth pastors during our tenure with the church.
He's got a Jim Moosey mustache. His mustache looks like Jim Moosey.
There was a fella named Jim Moosey at our church who did have a mustache. Thank you, Justin. That is narrow casting to literally
fucking
one other
got
person
him.
who is on this podcast. So, yeah, I'd love to see him sort of, pick up a Bible. Mm-hmm. Just see what he thinks. I would love to hear him say, you know, just I want to hear the word Mario. I want to hear the word Jesus come out of Charles Martinet's sort of just to see like what kind of spin he like a Jesus.
So,
a Jesus, a Christ.
I'm washed in his blood.
To be clear,
I'm made whole again. My body will die, my spirit lives on.
For God so loved the world. A Luigi.
Amen.
So the game that you're describing, just because I want to be clear here, is Mario, his mind, an underground colony of which his disciples live. Their only reward is the ability to go pee-pee-poo-poo. Otherwise, they must listen
they
to
They are also paid in Mario Bucks.
Oh, yeah.
I did want to point out, they're paid in Mario Bucks.
His, you know, company store money.
Script. It's Mario's script.
Okay. Okay.
And also, oh, sorry, the other reward is everlasting life.
Mm-hmm. Pretty good.
Pretty good deal, actually. I would do that. I would
pretty
get in.
Deal.
So I actually have to run. I have to hop on a plane back to Seattle.
I don't
want to
say...
You
shouldn't be doing that. You shouldn't be just frivolously riding on planes right now, Jake.
It's my own. It's like a kind of Wonder Woman invisible plane.
Okay.
It's what we all use in Nintendo. But I'm not going to say yes.
That explains why sometimes I would look out the window and just see Reggie in a seated position just sort of flying by me. That makes a lot of sense now. I thought that that was like some sort of crazy Pizza Hut power that he had. But you're suggesting it's the Nintendo's fleet of invisible airplanes. Thank you for clearing that up, Jake.
Right. Well, yeah, not going to say yes, but not going to say no. And we'll get back to you.
Thanks, Jake.
Thanks, Jake. So appreciated.
I'm back. It's me, Plant.
Thanks, Plant, for coming back. Do we have any messages from the fans at home?
There's one that I want to highlight, and it is from Jeremy on Twitter. He said, besties, have you guys thought of doing a segment or social media bit about best games to play on services such as Xbox Game Pass or PlayStation Now? A lot of people are quarantining, and they're using these services to burn through games and need guidance. So we talked about PlayStation Now a little bit the other week, so we'll skip that for this time and maybe talk about it another time. But I do want to talk about Xbox Game Pass. I want to see if y'all have anything that you recommend that people might have missed. And Russ said I can't mention Nier Automata, so I'm definitely not mentioning Nier on this podcast, but we will talk about other games.
I want to call attention to a game called Astroneer, which is a game that came out on PC a while ago and then came to, I think, early access Xbox, and it's on Xbox Game Pass now. It's basically like an astronaut sim. You land on a planet, and what's cool about it is that it's all about like the logistics of like spreading like oxygen tubes throughout the planet so that you can explore deeper and deeper into it. And it's got this like lo-fi, low-poly aesthetic that's really neat. It's very multiplayer friendly, which is really cool. Yeah, I played it a ton on PC ages ago, and it's gotten like a bunch of updates since then. So definitely recommend it. I feel like it hasn't gotten a lot of shine on it, and worth checking out.
I actually would like to dovetail onto that, because in a similar vein, I wanted to talk about Subnautica.
Oh, yeah.
Subnautica, if you have not played it, I feel actually literally jealous of you. It's one of my favorite games of the last 10 years. It is a survival game in this vein of like Minecraft or Dust or whatever, where you are basically, you have a tiny submarine and you have crash landed on this alien world, and you are diving down into the ocean to try to find resources and ways to build up your sort of like underground colony. And everything in the world, from coral and fish to like different plant life, whatever, it's all resources that you can mine and create like better and better stuff. And the sense of discovery, one with like of resources, like killing this fish with your knife and realizing like, oh my God, I can turn that into rubber, and this will help me make flippers that'll help me swim better, etc. The progression is really great, like really, really addictive. But it's also got this wonderful sense of, partially because it's underwater, this wonderful sense of like swimming into a place and realizing like, oh fuck, I should not be here. I am not ready to do this. I am terrified and I'm almost out of oxygen. I have to just keep going deeper and I hope I find something. And it is absolutely fantastic. Subnautica is the name.
I do want to call attention to one quick thing. Plant just waved to someone like he was in Mayberry. He's like,
that was insane.
Cheerio.
You're in your office. How could this happen? I noticed that too, and I didn't want to say anything, but Hachi Machi, what a trip.
My window faces the front door, so I can say hi to people lovely. If they walk by.
It was so nice. Griffin?
I have a couple real quick one. Literally, Minute, MINIT, on Game Pass. That one is like, pick it up in an afternoon where you have some time. It's fun as hell. I'm pretty sure we've talked about it on the show before, where you have 60 seconds and you get to explore, and after 60 seconds, you die, and you have that time to like finish out loops and collect items and hit checkpoints and do like whatever you can to continue exploring this world. Knowing that you have an extremely limited window of time to do that. The other is, and I didn't realize this was on there, is Bloodstained, Ritual of the Night.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of people slept on that, and I have been jonesing for a good Metroidvania to play right now. I've dipped into a few. The new Shantae game that just hit Switch, which isn't really clicking for me, and The Messenger, which I got to like the twist part of that game, and then it wasn't doing it for me anymore, and it just made me wish I could just erase Bloodstained from my memory and play it again, because that is just the richest, like mechanically speaking, progression wise speaking, like the richest Metroidvania game to come out in recent memory, and the fact that it's, you know, free on Game Pass is fucking exceptional. So if you haven't played that one, go play that one.
I'm gonna call it a quick bundle of games that I would say are the things that you might be interested in but probably won't spend money on, and that's the joy of a service like this. We've talked about World of Horror on the podcast. Yeah. That's on here. Lonely Mountains Downhill is one of my top three games of last year, I think. It's just absolutely fantastic, and it's just a simple biking game. And then also, Outer Wilds is the other indie, but I don't know a nice way of saying this. A lot of Xbox exclusives are better in the Game Pass format, because they're good or interesting, but maybe not something that I would want to spend $60 on. Right. So that includes Disneyland Adventures, which was a Kinect game, which is
so cool.
It's kind of a mess.
It's so weird.
But it's so cool. I know a lot of people don't necessarily play racing games, so I want to make sure people try Forza Horizon 4, because even if you don't like racing games, it is such a blast. Really, if you like any open world games, it's worth a try. And Crackdown 3, I'm not saying it's a perfect game at all, but for the low, low price of free in the time of a weekend,
you need to subscribe, but yeah.
Yeah, it is really enjoyable, especially with a friend. If you want like a taste of that original Crackdown feel, it certainly accomplishes that, and I recommend you give it a try. And I think that's it on my end.
Yeah. Oh man, I have such a good game that I'm playing, but
you can call it out if you talk about briefly.
No. We'll talk about it next time because I'll still be playing it. Boy, that would be very annoying to hear as a listener. I cannot imagine. Anyway, thank you so much for listening to the Besties. We hope you've had fun and gotten a little break here. Hang in there, like literally everybody on the planet.
Yes. Do we want to next week write is Clubhouse Games? Is that correct?
Yes.
Yeah, I wrote chess on the rundown, but I guess we could talk about all of Clubhouse Games.
We could probably talk about all 51 of the Clubhouse Games. Holy shit, I'm excited to talk about that one. It has been a fucking incredible little thing for me to have in my little Switch. Appreciate it. Appreciate you, Clubhouse Games. Backgammon? Fuck yeah.
Justin, where can people find us?
I like Cribbage. Is Cribbage on there?
Cribbage is not on there.
Well, maybe next time. Yeah, we're on Spotify, as you have probably know, because you're listening to it. You can follow and listen for free there. If you want to share the show with people, use the URL besties.fan. It's also where you can send mail to us, mail@besties.fan. If you could share the show, tell people, hey, this is worth listening to. Just shoot them that link and they can listen to it. And that'd be really nice.
You can also follow us on Twitter @TheBestiesPod. And if you want to join our newsletter, it is the pinned post on the top of our Twitter account.
That's going to do it for us. So be sure to join us again next time for The Besties. Because shouldn't the world's best friends pick the world's best games?
It's a Spotify original podcast in association with Vox Media. The show is edited by Jelani Carter and produced by Ben Hosley. And our theme song is by Ian Dorsch.
Besties!